evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dengbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, August 19th, 2019. Sudan begins choosing its sovereign council, including military leaders who some citizens believe should be in prison.
They made a lot of crimes for the Sudanese people, and I think they should have been taken for the court.
And Sudanese religious leaders are demanding freedom of worship.
Our educational system during the previous regime was all related to Islam, almost everything. We hope to see change in the coming era.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two controversial military figures are among the people chosen to sit on Sudan's Sovereign Council, the body that will lead the country during a three-year transitional government. Sudan's military rulers and civilian-led opposition are expected to finish making their selections in the next few days. Meanwhile, former President Omar al-Bashir has gone on trial for corruption charges. In Khartoum, VOA's Aisha Sarai has more.
First Lieutenant General Mohamed Hamdan Daglo, otherwise known as Hemeti, and First Lieutenant General Abdul Fattah al-Burhan were named by the now-dissolved Transitional Military Council to represent the military in the new government. However, Hemeti and Burhan are both widely presumed to be responsible for attacks against protesters, which left over 120 people dead in June. And many Sudanese, like Khartoum resident Nader Ali, think they should be on trial instead of in the government.
When it comes to the military council, they have done terrible things, but eventually they came to made an agreement. But also they made a lot of crimes for the Sudanese people, and I think they should have been taken for the court, as well as al-Bashir. They should have been jailed, and justice should have taken place.
The Opposition Forces of Freedom and Change, or FFC, had yet to confirm the names of some of their five appointees to the Sovereign Council on Monday. And the all-important tiebreaker seat, set aside for a civilian with military experience, is also unfilled. Amna Abdomonyam is confused by the delays. Abdomonyam says she doesn't understand why the 11th member of the Sovereign Council has still not been named. But others, like Abdullah Mahmoud, says he appreciates that the decisions are taking time.
It's a process and it's taking too long, but I think that's a good sign. It's a good thing it's a process that's been taken seriously. They didn't just nominate anybody and...
As Sudan's new leaders prepare to be sworn in, former President Omar al-Bashir went on trial for corruption charges. Bashir, who was ousted by the military in April, is accused of possessing large amounts of foreign currency. According to a detective who testified Monday, Bashir told investigators he had received millions of dollars in cash from Saudi Arabia. However, most Sudanese, like Walla Bashir, are unimpressed by the trial, saying that it is too little and too late. Bashir says the Transitional Military Council took too long to put Bashir on trial, and that his date was postponed so many times. She thinks that Sudan's justice system should focus instead on punishing those who executed violence during protests over the summer. Bashir also faces charges of genocide at the International Criminal Court in The Hague for his actions during the war in Darfur. Aisha Sarai, VOA News, Khartoum.
Some Sudanese church leaders are calling on the upcoming transitional government to allow freedom of worship and assembly for all religions. Some Christians say they would like to see the revolutionary theme of freedom reflected in schools and other public institutions. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Khartoum.
Many Christians in Sudan say they have not had the opportunity to practice their faith in public for many years because the government places restrictions on them. Right Reverend Shimel Abu Zamam Kori is the head of the Sudan Christian Church in Omdurman. Speaking in Arabic, Kori says Sudanese security forces arrested him several times for organizing a prayer service in the neighborhood in 2015. He says he spent nearly 2 years in prison along with other four church leaders after he was accused of spying on the Sudanese government. He says the new government must do better.
Let them give space for Christians to preach about their religion. Whoever wanted to become a Christian, they should allow this. We don't want to see people being detained or tortured just because they are Christian again.
Another Sudanese clergyman, Philmon Hassan Tutu, from the Sudanese Baptist Church, says minority Christian Sudanese were not given equal rights in the Sudanese educational system. Speaking in Arabic, Tutu says, despite being Sudanese, many Christians in the country feel out of place due to the political environment dominated by the Islamic faith.
Our educational system during the previous regime was all related to Islam, almost everything. We hope to see change in the coming era. We want our Sudanese lovers to educate our children patriot spirit and purely science and knowledge. It should not discriminate against any other group of people because of their beliefs.
Tutu also says many workers discriminate against him at his place of work. For example, he says he does not take part in Christian holidays as his Muslim workmates do. Tutu says the upcoming transitional government should treat all Sudanese equally.
You want to see regulations and laws that punish everyone discriminating against anyone for his or her belief. You want to see this reflected in employing civil servants, providing any other services in the country. We need our new government to put the theme of our revolution, peace, freedom and justice, as reality.
Bishop Yunan Tombe Trile, the Catholic Bishop of Elubai Diocese, notes that Sharia law discriminates against other religions in Sudan and that Sudanese were forced to follow Islam against their will. Bishop Tombe says people should be free to choose their religion.
If people are free to understand God and believe in God with their freedom and to accept God as personal in their personal understanding and belief, and then there is a good opportunity for many people to know Christ in this country.
Bishop Tombe says he hopes that Sudanese revolution will bring about real change in the Sudanese society where all people are treated equally regardless of race, religion or political affiliation. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
Some Juba residents are calling on South Sudan's leaders to do more to protect the lives and property of citizens and assure them there will be no return to war as the November deadline to form a transitional government approaches. The citizens made the remarks during a weekend meeting organized by the UN mission in South Sudan to promote community dialogue on last year's peace deal. Winnie Torino has more for VOA from Juba.
More than 100 people attended the forum entitled Neighborhood Advocacy for Peace in Juba's Gombo neighborhood. The dialogue is being held to encourage members of the pre-transitional committee, which oversees implementation of the peace deal's pre-transitional activities, to interact directly with citizens. Participant Ajing Jong says the political disagreements that started the conflict in 2013 were not exactly the same as those that touched off the fighting in 2016, and he does not want to see another disagreement leading to more fighting.
In 2013, the problem started from above. In 2016, the problem started in day one. This time, are you not going to disagree something in day one again?
That is Ajing Jong, a participant at the meeting, asking South Sudan's leaders to assure citizens that the country will not return to war. Aurelio Gwena Omolo is a traditional dancer from the Lotuko community. Omolo says she usually gets excited when her community is invited to perform during peace advocacy events, but says she fears South Sudan's leaders are taking too long to restore peace and stability across the country. Speaking in Arabic, Omolo says all her life she has experienced nothing but war. She says she would like to see her grandchildren live in a peaceful country.
You go to the bush and you find someone there will kill you. That is why we are saying South Sudan should have peace like those days when we were in Gombo here. We would go to the bush and collect firewood, and our children would study with money earned from selling firewood because there was no work. But nowadays, they disturb people at night. They attack people at night.
30-year-old Jing Jong Bo says since the beginning of the year, armed men have attacked him 3 times at his home in Gombo. He says he wants the government to improve security within residential areas so that people can sleep peacefully at night. But Bo says people have several times been tortured for expressing themselves, and he expects the government to allow people to freely express themselves.
People have to be protected in their houses. This day, a lot of robber thieves are breaking into the houses at night, which means they are free. They know that there is no security moving around, so they have to provide security to move at night to protect life of people in their houses. Another security is a freedom of speech.
South Sudan Vice President James Waniga says the government will start cracking down on people who own guns illegally.
In the agreement, there is an article about disarmament. And I want to tell all the Junubin that we are going to start disarmament, and those who are hiding their guns in their houses or even buried in their fields, let them know that that one is punishable by law. And if they don't surrender those guns through peaceful means, we will take them using other means.
Iga says the parties to the peace deal are working hard to ensure that their forces are not only trained, but unified by November ahead of forming the transitional government. Gwang Kong represented David Scherer, the special representative of the UN Secretary General at the event. Kong read from a letter by Scherer in which he said the parties to the agreement should form a unity government by November 12th, no matter what.
The formation of the transitional government should not be delayed, even if some outstanding tasks are not to be entirely complete by November 12. Nothing that should have been achieved in the pre-transitional period cannot be completed in the transitional period.
Kong says some of the outstanding issues, like the number of states, will require all the parties to make decisions together so that all parties can collectively be responsible for the results. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A Ugandan coach embraces an American sport, but will the rest of the country? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle criticism?
Well, with criticism, it depends whether it is a constructive criticism or it is a destructive criticism. When it is a constructive criticism, you take it so that you make some changes in your own life.
How I do handle criticism is by having confidence by myself in everything that I do. As long as I've done it in a perfect way, that's it.
I don't look at a criticism as something that should let me down. Even if somebody is criticizing me for doing something wrong, I take it in a positive way.
If the criticism is better, I handle it with care, and I receive the criticisms happily because I know that it is for my own good.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese students have won scholarships to study at various universities in China. Many of them say the scholarship is a lifetime opportunity that will enable them to achieve their dreams. But a South Sudan's ambassador to China warns the students to be careful, noting other South Sudanese wound up being thrown in jail for breaking Chinese law. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
A smiling 18-year-old Sandria Claudia of Juba looks excited as she waits to receive her airline ticket at China Embassy in the capital. Claudia is among 29 young South Sudanese students who will travel to China in about 2 weeks to attend a university there for 5 years. Claudia says, ever since she sat for her secondary school certificate examination in Kenya in 2017, she has been praying for a chance to pursue a bachelor degree at the university outside of South Sudan. With this opportunity, Claudia says she hopes to achieve her dream of becoming an engineer back home in South Sudan.
I'm going to study Bachelor of Engineering in Petroleum Engineering in China University of Petroleum, Beijing. When I come back, I'll be a petroleum engineer. You know, there's oil here in South Sudan, and it has just been discovered, yes? They need, like, local people to take up the opportunity to explore more of the natural resources in our country.
Sabino Edward, who also won a scholarship to study in China, says he hopes to contribute to the development of South Sudan infrastructure after completing his studies.
This is a great opportunity through Chinese scholarship, yeah. So my course is architecture. I'm going to study architecture. Actually, it was my dream since I'm good in art and designing. It was my dream to go and study abroad architecture, to come back to my homeland and develop it. As the way I see our country still, it needs more development. So I choose this course especially for development of my country.
John Andruga, South Sudan ambassador to China, says in the past when many South Sudanese students received similar opportunities, some of them wasted their time abroad. Andruga says some students failed to provide full details about their background when filling out online scholarship applications, so it becomes difficult for South Sudan Embassy in China to report on their academic progress to their parents. Andruga is warning new students to conduct themselves in a professional manner while in China, or they could face severe consequences.
And there's no compromise in the breaking the law in China. When you break the law, there's no bribery. You must face the law and physically be in a jail. Some students now in China, they are telling their parents they are in schools. As a matter of fact, they are not in school.
Andruga says any South Sudanese student who misbehaves in China will be sent home. Chinese ambassador to South Sudan Huan Ying says China will continue to strengthen its diplomatic ties with South Sudan, including offering scholarships for higher education.
The number of scholarships offered by the Chinese government to South Sudan has increased year by year. This year, a total of 29 outstanding South Sudan students received the Chinese government scholarships, and nearly another 100 students will receive other scholarships to study in China. I'm proud to announce that China has become one of the most popular destination countries for South Sudanese students seeking to study abroad.
An ambassador Huan Ying notes many South Sudanese have returned to their home country to work in their careers and have become what he calls the backbone of different sectors in South Sudan. China has provided millions of dollars in humanitarian assistance to South Sudan over the past 5 years, but China has also reaped huge financial benefits from South Sudan oil production. Analysts have assessed South Sudan as having the third largest oil reserve in Africa. China jumped into South Sudan oil sector long before other countries did. It entered Sudan petroleum industry in 1995, 16 years before the country gained its independence, and continued to invest in South Sudan long after other countries held off on investing in the South Sudan during 5.5-year civil war. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Authorities in Cameroon are giving huge consignments of food, money, and equipment to militias fighting Boko Haram on the country's northern border with Nigeria. The militias are defending areas from which the military has withdrawn. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the northern town of Kusari.
Authorities in Cameroon are giving huge consignments of food, money, and equipment to militias fighting Boko Haram on the country's northern border with Nigeria. The militias are defending areas from which the military has withdrawn. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the northern town of Kuseri. 20-year-old cattle rancher Hussein Abu still suffers from pain in his abdomen and forehead from when he fell into a river while hiding from attacking Boko Haram fighters on August 3. Abu says he and his father were part of the militia on duty in Kuseri that day. He says his father was killed in the attack alongside four other vigilante group members. Abu says if his father were alive, he should have been able to ensure his young ones would have education, food and clothing, and he should have had a means to take care of his failing health and that of his mother. He says he wants the state to help him. The government appears to be listening. Authorities have given $500,000 worth of food to Kuseri and an unspecified amount of money. They pledged to give $1 million to militias in other areas. The militias are defending areas from which the military has withdrawn, presumably to fight separatists in Cameroon's English-speaking areas. Officials say the self-defense groups are needed to stop the fighters who infiltrate through porous borders and hide in the communities. After years of battling the armies of Nigeria, Cameroon, and Chad, Boko Haram has lost much of its military strength but still attacks villages in northern Cameroon with machetes, long knives, and locally made guns. 32 militia men and civilians have been killed in less than a month. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, says the terrorists are now targeting militia men because they are an impediment to small-scale operations like burning schools and markets.
À la veille de la rentrée scolaire, qui pointe
derrière l'horizon. He says Cameroon President Paul Biya sent him to encourage each and every member of local militia groups who have abandoned their farms, ranches, and businesses to be steadfast in collaborating with the military to defend Cameroon from Boko Haram terrorists. He says all those who have died in the process will be forever remembered by the nation they paid an ultimate price to save. Aliu Seni, spokesperson of the militias in Kuseri, says the gifts motivate them to work, especially given that schools which have been closed for several years are preparing to reopen on September 3.
C'est un sentiment de satisfaction, de conviction.
Seni says although they need regular and not impromptu assistance when crises deepen, the gifts from President Paul Biya have assured them of the state's support for their efforts against Boko Haram, and they are now more than ever determined to fight the terrorists, even if it means paying the ultimate price to free Cameroon and its people. Cameroon authorities have warned that Boko Haram may be planning other raids that may affect school-going children and their teachers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kuseri, Northern Cameroon.
At least 19 people died when a field truck rammed into other vehicles in a busy town in western Uganda last night and exploded. Police today said the blast occurred in the Kiambura Trading Center. At least 10 people died immediately, and others when killed with the crash caused multiple explosions in other cars, which spread to nearby shops. The crash in Uganda came 8 days after a crashed fuel truck exploded in Tanzania, engulfing a crowd that had gathered to collect gasoline from the wrecked vehicle. 95 people died in that incident. In 2002 in Uganda, more than 70 people died when oil truck hit a bus. We stay in Uganda now, where a coach's passion for baseball is getting schools to embrace America's favorite pastime. But as we hear from Halima Athumani in Kampala, a lack of government support means baseball in Uganda is heavily dependent on donations.
George Wilson Mukwe has worked as a baseball coach in Uganda for the last decade and for the last 3 years as a Major League Baseball scout in Africa. He says there is impressive talent in Kenya, South Africa, Tanzania, and Uganda. But Mukobe says few sports shops sell baseball equipment and there is a lack of facilities and support.
Baseball faces a big challenge because since people have little knowledge about baseball and it's a damn expensive game, they say maybe next time, you know. They run for quick sports like soccer and athletics and volleyball, you know, basketball. But with baseball, it's really tough. Even the coaches themselves also. You need to have enough knowledge to convince the kid that, yes, you know the game, so that you can teach them.
Uganda's baseball players are heavily dependent on donations from the U.S. and Japan, where Americans introduced the sport. Uganda's National Council of Sports says baseball is not among their priorities. Ismail Chigongo Dakaba is the council's spokesperson.
One of the things that lacks currently that you could think that they could do much better, baseball and as government, is to give the team the chance to compete. Today, they only compete largely against Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa. So maybe if there were many more countries competing, they would raise the kind of awareness.
Despite the limitations, baseball has come a long way in Uganda. In 2012, Uganda became the first African country to play in the Little League Baseball World Series in Pennsylvania. America's favorite pastime is attracting Ugandan converts such as 21-year-old Arago David, who plays for Uganda's national team and is an assistant coach.
First day I came, they told me, do you have a glove, this is a bat, baseball. I said, I'll try it and see. When I trained for a month, they called me and said, you know what? We are taking you to the national team, under 12. I said, okay.
In May, Uganda's national team came in second after the host at the Olympics pre-qualifier in South Africa. The success of Ugandan baseball is inspiring more players. 15-year-old Wenene Speciosa became a fan after watching boys play and decided she too could play baseball.
I know what I want. The coach loves me. And I got interested in my first base because I play first base. It's so interesting if you get to know it, really.
No, don't play! Not in the base!
While Ugandan baseball looks for more support, its young players will depend on coaches like Mukobe to take them out to the ball game. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Kona by Mafiki Zolo. We've been listening to Mafiki Zolo with the song Kona. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.